month. One for Dan, one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be in Australia.
Dead, buried, cremated.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to a special pocket money edition of Follow the Money, where we demystify the big economic issues in Australia and put them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute, and we're rushing this episode out ahead of the budget. Frankly, we thought we might not have to do it. We thought the company tax cut might be dead once it was clear the government did not have the numbers to pass it through the Senate. But the government is not giving up, the Business Council of Australia is not giving up, so neither is the Australia Institute. We've already done a full episode on why the company tax cuts are a bad idea, and you can go back and find that one. But today, Dave Richardson, Senior Research Fellow at the Australia Institute, joined me for a quick recap of the 14 reasons why the case for a company tax cut for big business has collapsed. Thanks for joining me, Dave. So I thought I'd just grab you for a quick chat today about the 14 reasons why the case for a company tax cut has collapsed. So to kick off, first of all, giving business a $65 billion tax cut means that there's going to be less money for services like schools, hospitals and other things. Is that right?
That's true. The Treasury modelling that is supposed to support the company tax cuts looked at three possibilities: a personal income tax increase, cut in government spending, and a poll tax. The poll tax was a silly one. The main alternative that they modelled was either increasing personal tax or cutting government services.
Yeah.
And the Treasury modelling implicitly valued government services at zero.
That's surprising.
Yes, and it means that, for example, a cut in education spending in the Treasury modelling has no negative impacts.
Yeah.
Which we know is crazy. There are enormous social and economic benefits from education, and Gonski reminds us all the time that there are big gaps in Australia's spending on education that should be addressed.
So that brings me to the second reason why the case for the company tax cuts has collapsed. The big four banks, they're going to do better than almost anybody out of this. How much are they going to get extra?
On our estimates, they will be getting, I think it's about $3 billion per annum when all this is fully implemented.
Mm-hmm.
We've based that on, you know, assuming that bank profits rise in line with the size of the economy. But yeah, we're looking at something like $3 billion per annum.
Per year. That's not small, is it? And they're some of the most profitable
exactly.
in the world already.
Well, that's right. That's right. They're doing fine without tax cuts. And as we're increasingly learning, their huge profitability doesn't reflect on how well they're actually managing their businesses, more on how well they're ripping off their customers.
Yeah, FIFA no service is definitely a service I've never signed up for anywhere. Seems like an odd business model, but it's certainly profitable.
Yes, that's true.
And some of the big winners are going to be tax avoiders and foreign shareholders. Why is that?
Well, tax avoiders, because for smaller companies, there are a lot of people who have the option of incorporating. People that work for themselves maybe have a little communications business, or lawyers, accountants, those sorts of people. They have the choice of incorporating. And when they do that, instead of paying perhaps the top marginal tax rate of 47%, they pay the company tax rate. Now, that incentive is already there, but as you cut the company tax rate, you further widen that gap and so encourage more tax avoidance among those little family companies, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And why is it that foreign shareholders will be getting the benefit rather than domestic ones?
Because with our dividend imputation system, generally Australian shareholders stand to gain nothing out of this. Their dividends are taxed on their ordinary tax rates and grossed up to account for the company tax that's deemed to have been paid on their behalf. If you reduce the latter by reducing company tax, then the shareholders have less franking credits to claim, so that even if their dividends go up a bit, they'll come off roughly the same. On the other hand, companies have to give the same dividend to domestic and foreign shareholders. So as companies tend to pay about the same dividend to profit ratio, foreign shareholders are going to benefit. And even if their dividends remains the same, the value of the shares will increase if there's retained earnings, that sort of thing.
Mm.
So for foreigners, it's unambiguous.
There's a clear benefit.
Yes. So to the extent that Google pays taxes in Australia, it'll get a little benefit out of that.
Yeah. That brings me to reason number four. There is no correlation between lower company tax rates, employment, or economic growth. You've done a lot of research into this. What does it show?
Basically, it shows nothing. So we did two approaches to this. First, comparing Australia with other OECD countries, and we find that there's no pattern between company tax rates and living standards, investment rates, employment, all those sorts of things. And we confirmed that by looking at Australia's history. In the decades since World War II, we've seen the company tax rate go from the mid-40s under Menzies down to 30 under Howard. It's stayed there since. But what we find is that, if anything, total investment as a share of GDP was higher under the Menzies rates than under the Howard rates. And likewise, foreign investment. We seem to be more attractive to foreign investors with the higher tax rates.
So you could argue the opposite, in fact, that a higher company tax rate would attract investment. It's got about the same, relevance.
Yep, that's right, that's right.
And so Coles and Woolies, they're not going to be hiring more checkout staff, are they, because of a company tax cut?
No, that's right, that's right. Why would they? Yeah. They wouldn't see themselves as welfare agencies.
So companies that do business in Australia, they do it because they want to do business in Australia for a whole range of reasons.
That's right. That's right. Take BHP. It's got all these very low-cost iron ore mines in Western Australia. Now, Singapore's got lower tax rates, and BHP will try and pretend that it's making its profits over there.
Yeah.
But it can't shift its economic activity over there. It can't shift its iron mines over there.
Yeah.
And look, likewise, we've got everything from IKEA to McDonald's in Australia. They're here chasing Australian consumers.
Mm.
Australian consumers aren't going anywhere.
And in fact, your research shows that most of Australia's foreign investment comes from countries with lower company tax rates than ours.
That's right. A lot of Australian investment, by number of proposals and by value as well, comes from countries with substantially lower rates of company tax than us. I mentioned Singapore. We get a lot of investment from Singapore. But also China, Malaysia, Hong Kong. Yeah, we could go on.
Yeah. And your research also shows that just 15 companies are going to share around about a third of the benefits of the cut. Why is that?
Business in Australia is very, very concentrated. And among those top 15 listed companies are the banks, for example. We have one of the most concentrated banking sectors in the world, which contributes to their massive profits. But alongside that, we have two major supermarkets, Coles and Woolies.
Two major telecommunications companies.
Yeah, well, one there, plus the little mobile players. Mm. It goes on and on. The big miners are in there too, of course. All of these have some sort of monopoly or whatever, and control a substantial part of Australia's GDP and collect a huge proportion of their profits. And as big, old, lazy companies earning these massive profits, they tend not to be big investors either, which means, that they don't have the deductions that some companies might that invest a lot.
Mm.
And that means they're big taxpayers too.
And in your opinion, there are better ways to create, well, not even in your opinion, the evidence shows, wouldn't it, that there's better ways to create jobs and help the economy than a tax cut.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's interesting that, you know, these are the reasons that the BCA give. But you never hear the BCA talk about the need for more employment, more investment, more productivity, unless they're talking about company tax cuts or historically, you know, reducing wages,
yeah,
smashing workers.
So they only selectively care about it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Self-interest has made them, well, they don't want to reveal their self-interest. There's not very polite ways of saying, we just want a lot more money because we do.
I'd happily put that to anyone if I thought it was going to do me any good, yeah. But I doubt I'd get...
Well, that's right. They're in the same position.
The benefits are really based on some absurd assumptions. Things like the morality dividend. What's that, Dave?
Oh, that was some work that Chris Murphy did. He was a consultant to Treasury, and Treasury, trying to case for company tax cuts, asked him to do some modelling. And one of the things he threw in there was the idea that if we brought our tax rates down lower, with less of a gap between, you know, the tax havens and us, then there'd be less incentive for companies to rort the system.
They magically find a conscience.
That's right, that's right. But according to him, you know, it was a big substantial whack that, you know, was going to be almost half the benefits, I think.
Oh, look out.
Yeah.
And I guess the reality is that the company tax rate's really never going to be low enough to satisfy big business in it. Like, once we go low, they're going to want to go lower in future.
Yeah, yeah. How do you stop feeding the crocodile?
And a lot of the companies don't even pay company tax every year because of the nature of business, I guess.
Yes, yes.
It goes up and down.
Yeah, yeah. There's been a lot of talk about that. Look, there's lots of reasons why companies don't pay tax sometimes or pay little tax, and there's some of the ones that have been newsworthy too. The Apples, Googles, Facebooks generate huge amounts of revenue here, but they're able to pretend that they have huge costs, for example, in their license fees to head office that happens to be an island.
That island head office is killing so many multinationals.
But it suits them to hold all their intellectual property, or say they hold it, in places like Ireland, where you can weasel a zero rate tax there. And so the more that you can, more of your profits you can assign to a place like Ireland, the more you get, more you escape Australian company taxes.
The public, I guess, know it, but we've also now had confirmation that CEOs are privately admitting this. But the company tax cut's not going to increase wages or jobs, is it?
No, no. People have used the expression trickle down economics. Now, the Business Council, for example, say, no, it's not trickle-down economics, it's much more direct. But what they're relying on in the modelling is that if there's a company tax cut and if in response there's additional investment, that changes the capital-to-labour ratio, which if there's pretty well-behaved textbook markets, that'll increase the wage offers. And so in a fully employed economy, you'll get an increase in the wage rates. Now, that's a very, very indirect and problematic chain. And I think trickle-down is a very good description of that. Galbraith once described it more colourfully. As a little boy, he remembers watching these particular birds that would stand behind the horses, and as the horses ate the chaff and digested that, they would pick through the droppings.
we'll that's have to not come up bad... with a new name for that.
Yeah, plop down.
But the BCA even did a survey of some of its own members, only like less than 20% of them nominated that they would allocate the extra profits to higher wages or more jobs. Over 80% selected either returning funds to shareholders or more investment.
Yep. This goes to the point that we've made continuously that there are a host of other factors that are important in investing. For a start, the companies want to make sure there's going to be buyers at the end of the process. And so, you know, you need to look at the state of demand and whatnot. And it was interesting, at the hearings, the BCA brought along Qantas and other companies, and Qantas was there ostensibly to talk about the incentive of tax cuts. But instead it talked all about how if GDP goes up by 1%, they reckon they need another 1% in their aircraft fleet. And so it was that sort of process that drives them. But the important thing was that despite what they themselves were there for to say, they were talking about all these other important things that drive their investment. And that's what other surveys have found.
As well.
Yeah. It's things like the state of demand determines whether or not you're going to employ more or invest more. If there's no opportunity to sell the stuff, you're not going to invest more in making it.
Yeah.
The other thing, interesting thing that drives investment is wages. Business keeps saying they'd like lower wages, but in fact, when there's higher wages,
people spend more.
Yeah, and they'll look at ways of replacing labour.
All right.
And so investing.
Yeah.
So it's those sorts of things that are much more important than the tax rates.
The other reason that this hasn't been going so well, perhaps, is because even though this represents one of the biggest hits to our revenue base, this legislation hasn't even gone to a parliamentary inquiry. We've had an inquiry into the BCA's letter, but not the actual enterprise tax plan as it currently stands. Is that usual, that we would have such a huge policy and not have it thoroughly debated and investigated by the Senate?
Look, it's very rare for something this big to go through like that, and you're definitely right about that. So the inquiry into the BCA pledge has turned into a bit of a de facto inquiry into the merits of cutting taxes as a standalone issue. But yeah, even the ordinary annual budget that's coming up, we're going to see massive amounts of debate on that in the Parliament before the bills tend to get passed around November.
Mm.
A lot of the time in the meantime will be Parliament itself debating and, you know, various estimates committees and all sorts of things in the meantime.
And there's no rush really to get these through Parliament because most of the tax cut doesn't even come in for many years.
Yeah, that's right. That's a curious part of all this. There have been stories that, you know, the BCA has put the blowtorch on the government a bit. If they can get this stuff through this parliament, then that insulates them a little bit from possible change of government, perhaps. So perhaps that's why they're pushing it so hard. But yeah, you're right. The big business doesn't even benefit till 23-4, and then it's only partial, and the full benefit for them comes in 26-27. So
fair way away.
Yeah, and anything can happen between now and then.
And voters don't even really believe this is going to work, or really there's not a lot of public support for the government doing it either.
No, that's right. That's right.
I must have been reading your research reports, Dave. Yeah, the voters, they don't believe that the government's claims that a company tax cut would help jobs and growth. And when we ask them, dollar for dollar, what is a better way to promote jobs and growth, a majority of voters across all parties, including coalition supporters, preferred funding health, education and other public services to cutting company tax.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And so finally, the tax cuts, they're not even going to be really worth it as far as I can see. What does the modelling show will be the actual benefit over many years?
Well, the Treasury modelling suggests that after about 10 years of being fully implemented, which is about 20 years away, GDP itself will be 1% higher. Now, that's if everything works as planned. The modelling itself is pretty dodgy. Modelling's, well, Keynes called it witchcraft. and it's still apt. But if everything comes to pass, then in 20 years' time, GDP might be 1% higher. Malcolm Turnbull has quoted the figure of average earnings being $750 a week better off, which is about 1% of current average weekly earnings. But in the interim, the modellers have suggested that GDP may actually fall before it improves. So in the build-up to the 20 years' time, we have some periods of subpar economic growth in front of us.
It's going to get worse before it gets better.
Well, that's what they're saying, because, well, that's an admission that taking things away like government spending has a big, immediate, powerful effect on the economy, whereas even in their rosy scenario, the company tax cuts have a slow and small effect.
1%, like, call me crazy, but for $65 billion of foregone revenue or whatever that works out to be, like, it's not a small package that is on the table. For 1% in, what, 20, 30 years' time, is that a good deal?
I was trying to be cautious to say if it comes off. But, you know, another thing I could throw in here, years ago I did some work looking at Treasury forecasts, and this is forecasting next year, not 20 years' time.
Yeah.
And the average error is almost 1% of GDP.
But if I was going to spend that much money, I think I'd want a bit of a better return on investment than 1% in 30 years' time.
That's right. I'd rather see the healthier people now and the happier school children and so on.
Right now.
Yes.
Not in 30 years' time. It's a good point, and probably a good point to end. Thanks very much, Dave. That's been Pocket Money, a short spin-off of the hit podcast series Follow the Money, brought to you by the Australia Institute. You can subscribe on iTunes or find previous episodes on the Australia Institute website at tai.org.au/podcasts. If you like Follow the Money, please rate and review us on iTunes. It helps other people discover the podcast. You can follow me at Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T. The Twitter handle for the Australia Institute is the Oz Institute with an AUS. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy, and you can find her at Jennifer Macy. Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum composed our title track, and you can find more of his music at pulseandthrum.com. Thanks for listening.